Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 8 of WP Late Night. I'm Ryan, joined here with Dre and Brad, and also with a special guest host tonight, Frederick Towns. Frederick, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
It's exciting. This is only the second time we've had... Oh, and hi to the normal guys, too.
Hello, Ryan. Thanks for letting us speak.
Yeah. But this is exciting. This
we
is only the second time we've had a guest on WP Late Night, and... yeah, should be fun. I think you bring a necessary amount of class to this group that we don't normally have here. So I'm excited to see what that...
That's very nice of you to say, but I don't think that's the case.
Okay.
No, well, this find out real soon.
Fact. This is fact. In fact, last week we had some more awesomeness. Josh Strable was on board, but dude, his hair, he looks like a hippie. So it kind of fits in with our mantra, right?
His hair is pretty long now?
It's crazy locks going. It's awesome.
Yeah, he's focused on his newborn. I'm pretty sure that's probably why.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's understandable. That is definitely understandable. So, I guess we should start off saying, what is everybody drinking? I think 3 out of the 4 of us are drinking something right now. So, Dre, why don't you start us off? Because I see you over there.
Had the trusty Newcastle. Can't go wrong there. It's a nice brown ale, and it's delicious.
Very nice.
I got some Dragon Blood Diet. Dragon Blood.
I'm into Irish whiskey right now.
What's that, Ryan?
Irish whiskey.
Nice.
He doesn't mess around.
My favorite tonight. Well, the last couple of weeks have just been
whiskey
kind of on boring
kind of
stuff. Yeah, so I'm happy right now. And I know you're, Frederick, you said you were working tonight, so you are dry, is that right?
I would like to be able to keep working, yeah. So.
Okay.
I need like a boo sound effect. That's one I'm missing.
That just makes me happy to hear all of the thing, all the sound effects that you don't have to play for us.
They're on my list for next week. I have plenty for this week.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of plenty for this week, we have tons of discussion topics that we could jump into. Is there anything? I mean, did I miss anything? Anything we should start with besides this? Just jumping straight into it, right?
I think let's fire away.
Let's do it. Frederick, you just kind of were looking through the notes, and I'm hearing some feedback. Might be some feedback maybe coming through somebody's speakers. Check on that. Might be. I don't know if you're using headphones. I'm not looking at the screen, but that might help if it is feeding back through you. I'll pay attention here. Any case, was there a particular story that we have listed there that caught your attention that you'd like to jump into first?
Let's see. I think the one that really was interesting was this Flippa deal with WP Mods.
Yeah, it's actually a follow-up.
I was really surprised with how these things shake out. I mean, Flippa is obviously a great service, but I'm just always shocked. I mean, it's like the opposite of eBay. I mean, eBay used to be great. I could like buy a hard drive, use it for a year. It was about to like go out of date, and then I'd sell it on eBay for like 50 cents less than I bought it for, you know, and you can't do that anymore. And so Flip is like the opposite, it feels like.
Yeah, this is a follow-up to we discussed this last week, because I think it had just gone up for sale had only been on sale for a few days. And when we discussed it last week, the highest bid was up to $30,000, which had not met the reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Now we look at it, and I'm wrong, so I'll admit it. I said it would not go a penny over $40,000, and it's currently over it's at $64,000, which has met the reserve with 2.5 hours left. So if you act quick, you could jump in and you could steal us away at the last minute for a cool, you know, 64 and a penny or something. I'm shocked. I did not expect it to go this high. I didn't think it would go anywhere near 60 grand, let alone I didn't even think it would hit 40, to be honest. I don't know why I said it, but
so
it's impressive.
Why do you guys think it's so high?
Well, I don't know what the background discussions are going on. I was on the same page with Brad in terms of what the final pricing would be. I didn't think it'd make over 40. I think that the more interesting thing is, and who knows again what the discussions were going on behind the scenes, but as of yesterday afternoon, it was at 35,000. So it went up almost 30 grand in the last probably, you know, 20 hours or so. So who knows? It hit the reserve.
Because last, well, in the post itself, he says he'd like to get around 80,000. Obviously, before it hits a reserve, you don't know what it is. So I don't know what the actual reserve was. It probably was maybe 60, I guess. But it's hit it. So, I mean, it's going to be sold in 2.5 hours for at least $64,000. This almost makes you want to start a WordPress site.
Right?
Well, the
this is good money.
I guess I'm not that familiar with how Flippa usually works when there's like a new bid. Does it restart that countdown? Because I feel like it's been at that 2.5-3 hour countdown for pretty much all day.
So yeah, it does actually. Okay. And I don't think it resets, Ryan. The hard stop is a hard stop if I remember correctly. Okay. I've sold a property there in the past. But it does look like it's been sitting there for quite a while, so I'm not sure what's going on.
I think David Bessay has it figured out. Start a WordPress site, run it for 6 months, flip it, profit.
That's not bad. I mean, 6 months, 60 grand, I mean, that's a healthy salary. And even in a year, 60 grand is a pretty decent salary. So, I mean, it's a pretty well-rounded site, though. I mean, there's a lot to it. It's not just a site that kind of aggregates people's content or whatever. There's a lot going on here. There's mods, there's articles, tutorials, themes, plugins, you know, there's videos, there's all sorts of stuff. So it's a decent sized site.
Well, I just hope that that people don't go off the deep end with that kind of thing. Like, you know, in the way that people did or still do, I should say, with domains, you know, I think it's a little too much to build things just to flip them, because they're never the same when the founder's gone, you know.
This is true.
That's the question. Yeah.
But I'll tell you, if I end up with a domain and someone comes and makes an offer at me and I can entertain large money for it, and it's whether it's accidental or on purpose, I'll take it.
Yeah, what'll be? I'm anxious to see what happens in 6 months after the sale. Like, is it going to be what happened to was WP Designer we were talking about last week? Bought it for like 60 some grand, threw up a top 10 best host affiliate links, and hasn't touched it in a couple of years. Like, I mean, I hope they keep, you know, they stay on it, they keep it active, they keep things happening, but you really don't know until that sale happens.
Time will tell. We also had another.
Did you buy it, Ryan? Is that? I mean, if you did, you can tell us. This would be the great place to.
No, I did not. Even though
going in with WP Candy,
it definitely doesn't make me sad to see you know, WordPress blogs selling well. That's always. Okay, because it's not clear, that was Brad doing that, not me. Just because it was timed
up
so
Ryan.
Well.
If you're ever curious, it's always Ryan.
We did have one other follow-up on ThemeThrift, which we talked about last week just in terms of interesting sort of theme sales business models. And I have a few stats here, but also I think we kind of questioned last week whether he would stick with what he's doing, and it seems that there is another theme up there for sale. Let me get a link into the chat so people know what we're talking about. But of note is that there are no... I'm putting it in the IRC chat. Maybe somebody can copy it over into Spreecast. Of note is that he doesn't include a free option now, though. He has it for $10 is the starting bid. After that, $25, $50, and $75. So it's not quite like it was before.
I'd be a little cautious, like, giving away things for free. I like the idea that he has different price points. Like, you know, base is $10. If you really like me, you think I'm doing a good job, you know, here's an option for $25. And then if you buy the two levels past that, kind of give you like an upsell. They give you a free gateway, a free payment gateway to something.
One of Pippin's things, I think. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But that's cool. Like, so you're giving them some options rather than saying, all right, here's the price. That's what it is. That's it. You're like, you're giving people ways that you give you a little bit more money. And if they do, you're actually giving them things back, which I think is a little bit better model if you're trying to make money in the business. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like seeing free things. And I always, if I get something out of it, whenever I see something like that, I always give back. I always make sure to compensate for that. But a lot of people don't, you know, they see something free and they just take it and run and, you know, they should have paid. So it's, I like this model a little bit better. Give people options.
Yeah.
I think when a theme designer is done or a developer has done a really good job, I think I think they should have some work that they give away just completely free, and I think they should have some stuff that they give away inexpensively, and they should have some stuff that they, you know, that they sell, you know, expensively. I think they should kind of, you know, fence things off themselves. You know, when you have a single theme with different options, it gets tricky, I think, a little bit.
Well, I think it gets tricky in that type of model as well, because I like that approach as well. Hey, here's a little, you know, a little something I created, and it's for you, it's for free. Here's something that, you know, you may find useful. It's a pretty low cost item, pretty quick value for you. And here's the big meat and potatoes, right? But it's a major challenge as a development or design firm or individual be able to push through that, right? Not in the sense of even creating it, but how do you get that to market? How do you sustain that? How do you manage it? How do you support it? So it really becomes a bigger, you know, overall thing to support, right? Hard to manage.
Yeah, I think that's why when I was looking at the stats, I was like, so many people are downloading it for free. I mean, are they realizing like how hard it's going to be for someone to support that?
Sure.
You know, why wouldn't you just throw $10 at the guy or whatever it is so that, you know, he's happy to get your email, you know?
Yeah,
and people are cheap asses. I mean, yeah, well, it's down to. People are cheap, man.
Well, but they don't think about that. I mean, think about the overall strains and problems you're going to run into when he or she can't support that because there's just an inundation of support requests for free, right?
Yeah,
that's a major issue. I prefer to pay the 10, 20, 30, 50 bucks, and now I know I'm going to have that support there, right? Or at least you have a better feeling that you'll have that support there.
But for the developer, what I was going to say is it sucks because – or it can suck because he doesn't or she doesn't like necessarily – can't necessarily segment like – okay, these are all the free support requests over here. You know, these are super low priority, obviously. Yeah. And here are all the people that paid me. I want to take care of them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I haven't seen any silver bullet for that.
Absolutely.
You got to wonder how many people got the free theme last week and are now having issues looking for support. Like, is that – I don't know if that was included with the free theme. If they get support, if they do, you know, are they going to assume that, oh, I got this theme, you have to support it, which a lot of people do. Say, I mean, we all know with our plugins and our themes and – you know, there's this kind of sense of entitlement. If you get it, whether it's free or paid, like there should be support around it, even though it's free. Like, why, you know, why do I have this obligation to support you when I'm giving you something free that's helping you out, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely going to happen. Guarantee you that.
I can only imagine. I mean, Frederick, you have one of the most popular, probably the most popular caching plugin there is, and one of the most popular plugins out there. I can only imagine the amount of support requests you get. And I actually wanted to bring this up. Totally off topic, but since we're on the topic,
sure.
That's, you have one of the more innovative support features in your plugin that I've seen, and I haven't actually seen anybody mimic this, where you offer kind of support within 15 minutes through the plugin, where you can say, hey, I need support. Hey, I'm willing to pay. I want you to call me within a certain amount of time, and this is the price, and boom, people click it and pay. I'm curious, is that work out for you? Is that a good model? Is that something other developers should be looking at to try out?
Yeah, of course that works. You know, people understand, like, if someone's having a problem, and most of the problems aren't that serious, you know, like, they just want the answer right then. And honestly, I'm not any different. You know, when I call AT&T because I have to get my, you know, data package sorted out, like what does it cost for someone to just fix it right now, you know? And, I think people understand that value, and the ones that don't, they don't pay, and that's fine. But the fact remains that when someone's paid and the request comes in and you know, we see some emails trickle in for people who haven't paid, I mean, those go unread. So, you know, that's just how it is.
I love, like you said earlier, I've loved it ever since I've seen it.
Yeah, there is no real way to segment it short of that, right? You know, I've got paying customers. You've got this brilliant tool at your fingertips. Plenty of documentation out there to be able to use that. If you're looking for that support piece, well, then you know you need to look at maybe paying for that. Other than that, you're going to go to the bottom of the stack. I mean, that's just at the end of the day, that's
pony up.
I think it's a realistic approach.
Yeah, I was talking to Mark Jakewith about that quite a bit because, you know, I'd used WordPress for a number of years, obviously, with Mashable and different things, Smashing Magazine, all these sites over the years. And I came to, you know, I look at development not really as a like a PHP developer. I just look at it as you know, just pick the right tool for the job, get the things done. And so when you kind of leave that world and you go into like this community, and you have to obviously, you want to get along with people, you want to create value, you want people to appreciate your work, you want to make a difference, obviously, because lots of your work is, you know, if it were love, it'd be unrequited, right? One of the things that I wanted to make sure that I figured out, and Yost and Mark Jaquith were pretty helpful with that, was just figuring out how people think. And like, yeah, they absolutely do want stuff free. I like free stuff. Usually I just don't anticipate getting a lot of value for free, and which is not typical. You know, like usually people have to learn the hard way good stuff isn't free. But the idea, obviously, that you can give away like a high quality product, help a lot of people, and that, you know, some of them recognize that they want to hire you for something bigger, or they want to pay you for, you know, some services around that that product, I think is a beautiful piece of open source. And, you know, even though, and I digressing a little bit, but this keeps bugging me. Like when you look at like the old Cold Fusion and .NET and all those different developers over the years, those guys used to make a lot of money, like a lot of money to do nothing. And I don't mean they didn't, you know, build stuff. I just mean for the price paid compared to like PHP stuff, like those guys made money hand over fist over the years, like historically. I don't know if you guys disagree, but that's what I've seen. And so it was interesting to me to like try to figure out and see firsthand why that is. I mean, you could even see when people work with what's it called? Magento, average price point of projects around Magento are even higher than WordPress. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing, you know, what makes or what helps WordPress turn the corner on, you know, professionals just, you know, earning more, because you create a lot of value with WordPress. You know, WordPress is the market leader in lots of different ways. And you've got guys like WooThemes, you know, making e-commerce easier. So, I mean, the tides need to change, and people need to kind of, I feel like people need to get on board with, you know, spending more money for more value in this community.
And the irony,
you know, it's interesting because you see a lot of like everyone's doing, trying different things, learning different things. I don't think there's definitely not a silver bullet in how to make money around this, as far as I've seen. Like you got what you're doing, you have the pay for, you know, everything's free but pay for support, or pay for the initial download and then support's free, you know, free updates for life. Like there's all these different business models around trying to make money around open source. I don't think it's just a WordPress thing. I think it's just open source in general. How do you make money at it? And no one's quite cracked that egg yet, and everyone's trying something different. But this is definitely something unique. And I know you've been doing this for a while, but it's something I've always kind of thought was a cool idea, and something I've kind of debated whether I want to put something like that into some of my plugins. Because I get a lot of support requests too, and a lot, you know, I have a forum that people can kind of get on there and help each other out. And if I have time, I try to get in there and help people out. But I don't always have a lot of time, so. And then I get these nasty emails saying I'm trying to do bait and switch and
yeah, charge isn't that crazy?
Things. And it's like, yeah, it's like I'm not, I could care less if you want to pay me to fix something. The fact of the matter is other people are paying me to do other things, so I don't always have time to fix these things for free. So I certainly make a task, you know, a list of bugs in this, and I push up releases when I can. But I feel like people think there's this self-entitlement for if I get it, then you should fix it, or you should help me set it up, or whatever it may be. So I just, you know, hats off. I love the idea. You know, it's, I think it's really, inventive, and it's clever. And I don't think I've seen anybody else doing it yet. So it's pretty
have
neat.
Anybody else seen anyone do anything like that? Just curious. I mean, Brian sees tons of stuff, so I don't know.
I haven't.
Yeah. Not specifically. No. But I mean, sure. I, you know, it's,
you're a trendsetter.
Yeah, there you
trendsetter.
Go. Something to steal.
Trendsetters usually have followers. I think I'm still standing alone. So
true.
I think it's interesting to see all the different people trying different business models. And really, the only disappointing thing, kind of like we were touching on here, is that there was even a discussion on Twitter a little bit about prices and particularly freelance developers raising prices. I think that's probably a universal issue. If there's ever a I think it was Bill Erickson and I think Jared Atkinson and a few other people were talking about their workloads and what they're doing. And these are all, I'm pretty sure all of them that were talking were Genesis developers. I'm not sure. But
both are.
I think a good rule of thumb is if you're ever wondering if you're charging enough, you should probably go ahead and raise your rates. because I mean the kind of workload that they have and the skills that they have, they absolutely could be charging. I mean, without even knowing what their rate is, they could probably be charging more.
And in general, like, if you don't know how much you can charge, you just raise your rates until people stop ordering.
Exactly.
It all really depends on audience, too, right? I mean, I think audience has a big play into that. If you're, you know, what is your demographic? What are you really looking at there, right? Because it's going to vary across the board. From a development design standpoint, if you're concentrating on mom and pop shops, well, they're probably not going to have they're not going to have that budget that you're looking for. So it really comes down to where you're concentrating. If your audience is going to dictate a lot of that. One, your workmanship, you know, the Jareds of the world and so on, do amazing work, and yeah, they could probably garner some pretty significant rates for their projects. But if they're targeting mom and pop shops, they're probably not going to get that money. So it's really, I think, a combination of that. And finding that happy medium where you're comfortable with the audience that you're working with, and you're getting the amount of money that you deserve for what you're doing.
Well, that's the thing that always comes to mind. Like I look at what Ryan's done with WP Candy and cultivating the community, and I kind of think about, you know, he's obviously wearing a publisher hat when he does that, but I think about, you know, the theme guys and the plugin guys, and it's like, you know, what does it take? Like, what's the silver bullet to get people supporting each other in the forums? I mean, there's some phenomenal guys, but I mean, they don't have time to sit there and like reply to everything for you. But I'll see like the same three or four or five guys, you know, hitting up the forums and helping people out. And I'm like, that's awesome. But like, I haven't seen, you know, and I don't see everything, but I haven't seen like someone like cultivate, you know, like this whole culture around their work in the community. I mean, there's, you know, there's all the major theme shops. They have their forums and things like that. But I mean, of course, people participate in there because they've, you know, they've committed some capital to it, right? They've got some coin in the game. But I don't know what it takes. I just know that there's an inordinate number of people out there. I mean, they leave comments on different blog posts and everything else. Like, how do we just get them into the forums, you know?
It becomes a challenge. I mean, I think that there's a technology aspect to that. When you look at, let's say, the WordPress forum specifically, I think it's a challenge really to transfer knowledge there easily. There's a lot of repeat questions and things like that, and it becomes discouraging for someone that is maybe more in-depth into the community and into WordPress to go in there on a daily and answer the same question 42 times. You end up building scripts to, you know what I mean, to just cut and paste stuff in. I think it's, so the technology piece and the way that the content's being driven there, I think, is a challenge. I think the process around it is maybe a bit cumbersome, the way that everything's segmented and categorized. So I think there's a lot of different idiosyncrasies that maybe push away more outstanding WordPress community members from giving back from in that medium specifically.
Does it need to be on WordPress.com, though? I mean, I think maybe that's even a bigger topic. I don't know. Or I'm sorry, .org. You know, in the support forums.
Drink
a lot
more,
of,
Brad.
Like you said, yeah, whatever. A lot of developers, they have their own support forum, right? And that's where they monitor, and it's probably attached to their site in some way, and it's something they're in on a daily basis, where more people, like you said, are monitoring that, even if it's something free or paid versus going to .org. And I feel like there's some segment there where, you know, everything on .org points back to .org. It wants you to stay on .org. Whereas, you know, you can set that kind of support, you know, where do I get support within your plugin itself. But if they put a focus on that, like on the plugins page, and said, hey, support is actually offered here, you know, and very big, bold, big button, get support, whatever, and it goes right to whatever you want to dictate, whether it's .org or your own site, that might clear up some of the confusion. Because I think it's split now. Like all my plugins, I have to monitor my forum and .org. And I don't do as good of a job monitoring .org as I should. I'll admit that. I definitely don't. But I try to monitor mine a little bit better because that's mine. You know, that's what I'm supporting. So I don't know. It's just my thought. But it's, you know, maybe there's a better way that you kind of point people to one specific place rather than.
That hasn't even worked for me, Brett. I don't have the big button, but I have the link, like, yo, go to WordPress.org, you know? And like people like will put a comment in, like, hey, I'm having this problem.
Email
I'm
you.
I'm like, dude, that's great. I'd love to help you, but like, what part of click this link to go to the forum is not clear.
I love it. No,
you
know,
I do so much, and people don't read, you know, so.
I don't read everything either, but come on.
I'll tell you, our model's a little bit different because all of our customers are our paying customers. We have our own support system and so on. But what we've talked to our team, all of our support agents, all of our engineers, even the senior leadership team, we spend at least a couple hours a week going through various forums. Obviously, we're more security-oriented and related. There are those type of questions on WordPress.org, so we do spend time there. I think Tony's in the chat room. He's talking about his experiences there. All of our team, from Stop Badware to different other security areas where malware is an issue, we go out and we try to help answer these questions, facilitate some type of awareness around some of the problems that they're experiencing. And I think that that's what it takes. It is really taking a responsible approach to what you're doing in the communities you're involved with. Predominantly, we're involved with WordPress, so it makes a lot of sense for us to go out and help out in that community as much as possible. But everybody's going to have a varying theory or strategy around that. I think it's important to give back. So we're doing what we can to try and answer and facilitate those questions in those open mediums. Is there a better architecture for supporting these type of questions, even around the open source piece, without pushing aside any services or products that we're offering and supporting? Yeah, maybe. Is there a way for us to maybe get together to facilitate that? Probably, but I think ultimately right now where we're sitting, it really is an individual push to try to help better support those questions that are being asked.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, there's lots of people who use, WordPress stuff who find it, in their travels outside of the community, right? And that's why there's WordPress Stack Exchange, doing its thing and all kinds of other, places for people to toss a question out. So it's definitely not going to there's not really going to be any kind of vertical integration, if you pardon the expression, on support. But it'd be interesting to see someone kind of have a point of view on, not best practices, but like, how do you actually trace Nash? That's great. Did you guys see Avengers?
I haven't. Dang it.
I did.
Oh, are you kidding?
I did see it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I heard it's pretty amazing.
Okay, we need the boo sound for Dre now.
Dirty.
That's unbelievable. Dude, I've seen it twice.
Twice. So you're saying you didn't like it?
No, I'm saying I absolutely loved it. I saw it on opening night, and then, what day was that? Thursday night, something like that? And then on Saturday morning, I got my ass up early and went at 9 a.m., saw it again. I'm that guy.
Which character did you go dressed up as?
No, actually, I my wife doesn't allow that kind of thing. But but Thor is my favorite at the moment, followed closely by the Hulk.
This could so quickly just dip into an Avengers fan cast.
Yeah, okay, so let's backtrack into security, because Dre said that they try to cultivate their communities wherever the people exist. And so why don't we segue back into the WP stats thing? I'm not really clear on the whole story there, actually.
You are the best segwayer we have on this show. was good.
Hey, Ryan, Brad, Dre, you're fired. This is now WP Frederick Towns.
Hey, this bad.
Oh, no.
Hey, this bad. Stop it. So a lot of fun stuff going on there. So, Two parts to that, really. A plugin, Vanch Search, which actually was taken out of the repository last year. A bunch of spammy stuff going on with that. We've seen it off and on over the last probably six, 8 months. The other piece of that is WPStats.org specifically. And they're spitting out a bunch of spammy links through some JavaScript. Not blacklisted yet, so we're still seeing active attacks through it. Again, the plugin that they're pushing out, the advanced search plugin, was removed from the repository. There's still people running it. In fact, I think Otto was the one that posted on the WP Candy post about it, saying that it had been removed. This is not a new problem. And I think that kind of raises a question to me. It's and we've seen this in the past. So how does that whole process work? Let's say, how many WordPress users do we have using free plugins from the repository? Quite a few.
Couple. Couple,
yeah,
three.
Just a couple. Now, this plugin's been found to have a security problem. It's been removed from the repository. But what has been done beyond that to notify people that still actively use this plugin that it's an issue? I think that that's probably the bigger question from a community standpoint. How do they know that this is a problem, right? I have this plugin. I downloaded it. I downloaded it from a trusted source. It's in my environment. How do I know that it's causing these problems on my site? And I think that there needs to be some discussion around how can people be better notified when a plugin or a theme or something that is sponsored, in essence, by the WordPress repositories at some point. How can we do a better job as a community to notify everybody that there's a significant security flaw or vulnerability in those plugins or themes or what have you? Because ultimately what we're doing is we're enabling people or allowing people to continue to use those things without notifying them. At least put it on them to take action to remove that from their environment or upgrade it, patch it, what have you. So what do you guys think about that? I mean, where do you guys stand in terms of, yes, they're removing those from the repository, but what action's being taken to notify the user?
Well, I'm reminded of it was a slightly different scenario, but wasn't Yoast. There was a plugin that was actually updated on WordPress.org, and then when it was pushed live or when people updated their plugin, it actually, I think, either removed or basically nullified that like bad plugin that they discovered. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, there was like 3 or 4 plugins, wasn't it? It was, in fact, Frederick's plugin was hacked too. They were hacked on right. in the I actual repos, remember?
Yeah, it was like WP
Touch.
So it pushed
out saying there was a new update, right? Well, yours was one of the ones infected, right, Frederick?
Yep, and WP Touch and another I can't recall.
I do remember that. It's in the end of last year, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Something like that.
I mean, not necessarily as a way that it should be handled now, but I mean, that's one way that it was taken care of at one point.
Well, the thing that
I remember, didn't they send out an email? That's how they handled it. Kind of send out an email to everybody saying, "Hey, if you download this update, you need to update right away," or something.
Well, there was a post and some tweets, and I don't recall. Well, there's an email to the developers, you know, from Nason and a couple other guys, I think. But to Dre's point, I think he's trying to highlight that there's a pretty big disconnect, and there's no way, you know, it's not like. Okay, granted, you know, Apple's App Store is a walled garden, right, where they could just, you know, push. If they wanted to push notify everybody, they could Big Brother that all day long. So we obviously don't have that. But there are some cases where, you know, it would be lovely if people could have that kind of experience, because at the end of the day, what happens? Like, they end up having a negative experience either with – some professional that tries to sort them out, their host thinking that they're, you know, up to no good, or, you know, they just think WordPress doesn't work, you know, and let's be honest, when you're dealing with kind of a quote mass market product, you know, most people just think like it works or it doesn't, you know, I started my car, it's running, you know, it's not starting today, it doesn't work, you know, like that's how they see things. So I don't know what would, except for having a walled garden kind of scenario, which is not necessarily ideal, obviously. I mean, it has its trade-offs. I don't see any way to necessarily do anything other than what we do, which is, you know, have all the influencers kind of trickle this information down. But most people who set up their website and then just go back to work or whatever it is they do are not even – it's not even on their radar that they need to be listening to any one of the 200 or 300 people that are influencers in the community, you know?
Yeah, and I think we all do a great part of that in terms of that. Now, when you look at updates on a vulnerability, I mean, we talked about some funny business going on in the repository at the end of last year and a few highly popular and publicized plugins. There was updates pushed to that. But in the instance where it's removed because it's a known major security problem and we're not alerting to anybody, I think that we're actually pushing towards becoming a bigger part of the problem than actually helping. By removing that and not somehow getting that word out.
I mean, wouldn't it be awesome if they just – I mean, I'm sure they thought of it, and I'm sure there's something wrong with this idea. But what if they just took the plugin and, like, revved it, you know, bumped the version number, and then, you know, just people would see the update, and the update would just bump it out and say, hey, remove this plugin. It was bad. I mean, why didn't we do that, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't think the answer is an automated approach. I think the answer is more of a, like you said, getting the message out more in their face. You know, like I don't think WordPress should ever at any point even have the ability to automatically remotely deactivate things.
Oh, no, that's not what I mean. I mean, like they would like remove access from the developer, bump the version number, take out all the code, and just have it throw a notification when they update that says, hey, you disabled this plugin, you know?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Let them pull the trigger, but
yeah, you're going to put that in their face, right? So now, right now, you get an alert when a plugin's ready to be updated, right? It's going to tell you how you got an update. It would be something similar. The mechanism would be, I would imagine, very close to that. If I'm understanding you correctly, there, Frederick, and it makes a lot of sense to me. Now I go to the update area, and when I go in there, it says, hey, this plugin's been removed because XYZ's been discovered. We highly encourage you to remove this. It's really going to be on the end user ultimately. It should never be a decision made by WordPress or anybody else. It's their site. But that notification makes sense.
I would go one step farther and put it even more in their face. Like if you've ever logged into WordPress in an outdated browser, you've seen that kind of browse happy message that literally smacks you in the face. You're like, oh, shit, what'd I do? And then you realize, oh, I'm on a silly browser, old browser, whatever. Something like that, like saying, hey, we haven't deactivated this, but there's security problems. You need to update this plugin right now. You know, something that is literally in their face. And if they can hide it if they want, but it's, you know, they have to take that action to hide it or to update it. You know, at least that way they realize it's more important than just a normal update. Because a lot of people do not update plugins.
That's a great
point. They're scared to.
And it's, well, you know, we've talked a bit about that. I think Ryan just posted a list about those annoying browser toolbars or the messages that may be popping up in your dashboard.
Brad, your screenshot earlier today was too good.
Yeah. Only 17.
What's sad is that wasn't. It's sad that that wasn't staged at all. That's literally a site I logged into right before I took that screenshot.
Oh man!
I just scroll down just to see like the top of the dashboard. Like you got to be kidding me.
I mean, the only time because I know somebody I think in the comments was like, well, if things were just updated like they should be, then they wouldn't see that many. But usually when I've seen, I haven't seen exactly that screen before, but if you, you know, particularly with some plugins, if you maybe are trying to troubleshoot a problem, so you get rid of a, you know, deactivate a bunch of plugins and reactivate a set back, there are plugins that will give you notifications when they're activated. And that's usually when you see just a slew of those, some of them in sort of standard kind of WordPress notification boxes, some of them in their own custom ones like you showed. It's a related issue. It's not necessarily what we're talking about here, but man, it can get offensive.
To close the loop on the security piece, I just think that we need to be a bit more cautious on how we are or aren't alerting people and where does our responsibility really lie. I look at what Frederick talked about and what Brad pushed even, you know, further in terms of alerting and notifying people when there's an issue. And I think that there are some possibilities. If us in 30 seconds discussing this, we're able to come up with some plausible approaches. I think that collectively as a community, there's different ways that we can approach it that would be more responsible towards our end users.
Can I quickly give props to the developer of this hack and his plugin? Because, you know, at least he's actually making sure curl's installed before he tries to use it. So, you know, there's something to be said for the way he's coding, right? Like he's checking to make sure it's there. Now, he's not obviously not using the proper HTTP API, but
right,
exactly. Yeah, he's making sure the function exists before he starts going and hacking your site. So,
awesome.
Hats off to you, hacker.
Nice.
Hacker? I don't even know her.
Oh. And on that note, on that wonderful note.
Sound effects for that one. Come on, Brad.
Brad's slacking.
What's that?
Hater.
That's the sound we're looking for.
On that note, before we jump into the next topic, I will thank the first sponsor for tonight's episode. It's actually a new sponsor this week on WP Candy, CSSigniter.com, which is a WordPress theme shop. And I should always have, I never have a link ready to put in the chat. One of you guys will put it in there. And they have a handful of themes, I think about 20 paid ones, one free one to try out. What I like about this theme shop is that they have a good number of blog theme designs, which isn't something you see a lot of, I guess, what would you call them, theme salesmen, whether it's a shop or an individual in Theme Forest or wherever they happen to be. You don't see a lot of people focusing on that, which I understand to an extent because I'm sure business and portfolio themes sell pretty well. But as a blogger, it's nice to see some stuff out there that isn't necessarily only for business users. So it's a theme club. They are $39 a year. It's one of those club membership type of shops. And they've got some cool stuff. over there, and we thank them for supporting WP Late Night and other podcasts on WP Candy.
If I could step back a second. So when you purchase one of those awesome themes and you get it up on your site and you want to make sure that the site is performing how it needs to, this is a plug that we didn't give earlier. Mm-hmm. W3 Total Cash, which Frederick Towns, the creator of that, is on the show as guest host today. Improve site performance, user experience via cash with W3 Total Cash. And we'll go ahead and plug that into the room. If you're not using it, you should be.
Absolutely should. I use it.
Indeed. In fact,
one of my go-to plugins.
Absolutely.
The beauty.
Sorry, what were you saying?
Am I the only one that wants to start a theme shop just to like name themes? Like I look at the name of themes out there and I'm just like, man, I want to come up with some really cool, just the name, forget the theme. I just want to come up with a bunch of names for themes. So if you're having trouble naming your theme, I'm available for work. So
I don't even want to know what that was.
You need a landing page for that. You should, $50 a pop.
Let me name your theme.
There you go. Theme namer.
Theme name. I'm sure it's
15-minute response time.
There you go.
Themenamer.com.
A whole new market.
Make sure you charge the appropriate rates, Brad. We want to make sure you're being compensated for your work, bud.
Yeah, your titles have to be GPL.
There you go.
I like that you want to do the easiest part of the theme development process.
Is that the easiest part?
I was going to say branding is pretty difficult, but you know Ryan got you a little bit.
Hey, I won't deny it. Building a theme the proper way is definitely takes some work and some know-how.
Oh, speaking of branding, I can't help it. On the theme show podcast earlier this week, if you guys haven't checked that out, we talked about a theme that we discovered that has a wizard hidden in the background. So just speaking of branding and themes, wow. Go hunt that one down because it is hysterical. I'm actually debating making a plugin that will just put the wizard on any site that – I don't know whether it be the front end of the site or the dashboard, but man, that made me laugh so hard.
Well, I'll tell you that the show name was enough for me.
Yeah.
There's wizard in your WordPress theme.
Exactly.
I was dying.
Exactly.
Good stuff.
So what about P2 then? Like, what's the skinny over there?
Well, just about 20 minutes probably before we got started here, caught wind via Twitter that p2theme.com has been redesigned, and it looks pretty awesome. I haven't seen anything in terms of a blog post talking about that yet. Anywhere. Here, I'll drop that into the chat. So I'm not sure if this redesign is going to come with maybe an update to P2 or whether there has been. I actually didn't check whether the theme was updated today. Maybe that did happen, but still exciting to see. I mean, it's a great design. I tried hunting around for a good screenshot of the previous one, but of course couldn't find anything right off the bat, so I'll have to ping the designer on that one. But
this reminds me of the... Sorry, go ahead, Frederick.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I thought the features were great in that theme. Like, it feels like one of the first original app themes to me, if that makes sense.
Sure does.
Absolutely. I use it multiple times every day. It's fantastic. Yep. And I think it's funny because, I haven't freelanced for a long time, but probably the last year that I was really freelancing and building sites for people, there were so many requests for basically that front-end posting functionality. Just that idea of instantly posting and seeing replies from people. You know, people see P2 and they go, that's cool, I want that somewhere. Not to say they needed it, because usually they didn't, but I think it's universally recognized as, oh, this is cool. This works really, really well. It'd be cool to see that maybe in some other places too. But
well, the thing that's interesting about that model, or... maybe I should say that kind of UI, is mm-hmm. that you could really, well, maybe not easily, but you could, it's pretty straightforward to have like different services push, you know, updates into that stream and be able to just have, you know, some filters so you could break them out by tags and stuff. And I mean, you could so easily have a pretty robust like intranet kind of deal happening. So anyway, I just think that's, you know, I think it's a really cool thing. I haven't seen anything similar, although I haven't searched, obviously. But I'd be curious to see someone like, you know, do kind of a case study or something about how they took P2 and started integrating, you know, because if you're working, like if you care about social media or you have a lot of different services that you use, you're like a dev shop or you're like, you know, some kind of like B2B, like, you no doubt have a lot of tools that are all disparate, and you could totally just have services just ping into that chat and, you know, just follow that all day instead of everything else.
One of the things when going to WordCamps that will just drive me nuts is talking to people about how they manage their teams. And P2 is brought up, and they say, oh, yeah, I've created this or that and this way to enhance it and this thing that helps attain it. But there's, like, a dearth of P2 plugins. There was one that came out just a few weeks ago, I think. I think it's P2 Resolved Posts, which allows you to mark P2 posts as unresolved or resolved. So we started using it, I think, for the late night P2 that we use, mm-hmm. Just to kind of try it out. But I feel like this is one of those themes where if there's ever been a theme where people should be releasing plugins just constantly with the little tweaks they do to it, this would be just the ideal theme for that. I like it a lot.
It takes a certain type of person to use P2 for, like, project management, P3. I don't know what they're going to call the next one. But, I mean, we actually organized WordCamp Philly 2 years ago completely through P2. And it worked really well. It was the first time I'd used it extensively, like with a group of people. I'd used it and played with it a little bit, but not in that kind of fashion. But we used it to organize the entire event. And it definitely had kind of its, you know, things I love, things I kind of hated. But it worked, you know, and we all used it and it worked well. And we got email notifications when there are new posts and replies, and it worked well. I was surprised at how well it actually worked to organize something like that. But a lot of people just don't get into it. Like, I've tried to set up P2 for project specific things, and you either get it or you don't. And if you don't get it, I don't think you're ever going to get it, and you're not going to like it. But if you do get it, you're going to love it. You know what I mean? Like, there's no in between. You either love it or hate it.
Like the new Basecamp.
Either you get it or you don't.
It's along the same lines for sure. I mean, the new Basecamp's lacking some features I need, like time tracking, but it's cool. Definitely looks cool. I'm jealous I can't use it.
I just don't understand.
But if I may touch on the... Oh, sorry. Please,
now you go.
No, I was gonna play devil's advocate on the new design a little bit. It's definitely like one of those one-page designs for sure, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's... And is there an official term for that, or is it just one-page design? I don't know what they're called.
Yeah, I don't know either, Ryan. You know?
One page.
Feels like that, but the thing it's missing is like...
Oh,
that,
maybe it's called long form. Like, is like that it?
Long form, one page design.
Page design. You
know, nailed it.
Whatever
it,
brand.
It feels like that, but it doesn't have like a... There's no floating nav, so you kind of... You don't... At first, you're kind of like, oh, this is the site, and then you realize, oh, I have to scroll. And keep scrolling and keep scrolling.
How old are you, Brad?
I'm sorry.
I really like all the floating navs that are happening everywhere. I think that's, you know, I did floating breadcrumbs for years, and I felt kind of weird that I did that. But finally, people are doing that. It's great.
Well, let me get your take on my personal blog. I've got it's my shameless plug of the week, dre.im. Mm-hmm. Does that constitute a floating header there for you? What's up?
Yeah, man. That's tight.
I'll look at it. Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of the one-page layouts like this.
Well, I mean, the old
P2. I mean,
P2.
They look nice. I think usability isn't where it needs to be, but, I mean, it's a good-looking design.
The old P2 theme... .com was a one page as well. What I think is interesting about this one, which I couldn't track down the screenshot to nail it down and nail down a comparison, but what I think is different, at least what I remember from the P2 theme site before and now, is if you look at the very top, the two primary actions that it's asking you to do is either start a P2 on WordPress.com or see a demo. You actually have to go down a little ways to find the .org install, which I think it used to just link straight to WordPress.org. So I think that's I thought about it. And that probably makes more sense for most people. If they want to use P2, this is a way to start and use it easy. But that's definitely, I think, a shift, unless I'm wrong.
Yeah, it still links to WordPress.org. It's just down in the blue bubble. I mean, I'll tell you, it's sure pretty. But for me... My first use isn't going to be on .com. I'm going to want to download it and put mm-hmm. it in my environment. So
that could be maybe part of a move to get more people that aren't in the WordPress community using P2.
Yeah. Go figure.
Could be. I don't know.
I thought you were a .com guy, Dre. That's not
.com.
.com all the time.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
No, not so much. Crash and burn.
That seems a little harsh, but okay.
fail.
Oh, my.
Man, I'm going to have nightmares this evening.
Hi there.
So,
I'm Sir Armada.
That just happened.
That's my new favorite sound clip.
I'm Drew Armada.
Wow, that's brilliant. All right.
So the go ahead, Dre.
Segue that one, Frederick.
Yeah.
Challenge. Yeah. I could if you want.
Hey, Hayden is bad. Hayden is bad.
So we have this list of these books.
Well, you should write a book on that.
Which there you go. Which I did not add, so I'm curious to hear more about it from one of you, whomever added it. I see it's a list of books.
Cool. I mean, I've penned a couple books in my day with long quill, but it's interesting because this is a blog post by Laurel, which is she's been around for a while, been around the block in the WordPress community, and she actually tallied up every single book written about WordPress since the start. Which I had never seen an exhaustive list like this. And I didn't even know what the first WordPress book was, but she did all the research and figured it out. So to date, there have been 201 books written about WordPress to date. Amazing. And the first book came out in July 9th, 2006 was the first book specifically for WordPress in English. I guess there was one prior to English, but it's called WordPress 2 in 2006. And that's actually... Funnily enough, that's probably about around the time I got into WordPress. But if you do the math, that's so 6 years of WordPress books, right? 201 books. Let me do the math again real quick.
That's
33. On average, 33 and a half books a year. Now, obviously, it's probably scaled up over the last few years, but that's an astonishing amount of books. I mean, 33 and a half books per year on average in the last 6 years around WordPress. That kind of blew my mind when I actually saw that stat. Do you guys know there are that many books out there? I had no idea.
Not at all. No way.
Well, I mean, I guess the next question would be how many worthwhile WordPress books?
That's the key.
Are coming
right?
out each year.
Because, I mean, I'd imagine that writing books for anything this popular can become quite lucrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get every swinging Joe out there that is into the whole publishing thing, trying to find a topic that makes sense for them. So how many of them are really written by reputable folks that know what they're doing, that have actually reached out to the right resources to get, information that's going to be educational and longstanding, versus just, some gobbledygook to get their book, published and make some cash. So that's a concern. I mean, I know this one dude, Brad Williams, wrote a book or two, and they might've been kind of cool, but I don't know if I can trust that dude.
I wouldn't.
Wow. Yeah. He's a little shady. He's a little shady.
Hey, he's there.
Yeah, I was waiting on it. If I learn to anticipate your sound effects quickly enough, I can mute you right when you use them.
Nice.
Every time. Just wait, it's coming.
Not every time.
That's great.
I hate, man.
So what? That actually reminds me. What's new in the book world, Brad? What is anything? Any news coming up in terms of? Because I'm sure you're not done. I'm sure you're.
Yeah, there might be a little news. So I haven't. The last one I did was the plugin development book, but it's actually been out for a year now. So I haven't actually written in like a year and a half. I'll announce it here, I guess, because I haven't announced it outside of Facebook. But I just signed the contract to do the second edition of Professional WordPress, which is the first book I wrote. So
yay.
I'm excited. Thank you. I guess I'll give a little speech.
Would this be the professionaler edition?
Professional. I don't know. I don't actually know proper grammar. That's why they have editors.
I believe it.
Because I write terribly. I just make sure the code's legit.
Speaking of that, I'd love to see three specific areas into that book. Okay, one being publishing, second being performance, and the third being security. And I know three guys would be helpful. And getting you through that endeavor. Just saying.
There will be, we'll definitely touch on all those topics. Professional WordPress, the original is, it kind of covers everything around design and development. So there's a lot to cover. I mean, you're talking how to make a plugin, how to make a theme, talking about the database structure and working with the database and, how to even install WordPress locally to work on it and things like, how to hook into SVN. So there's a lot of stuff to cram into a book. But we're definitely going to talk about a lot of things. I'm excited because the original is 2 years old. It's still pretty accurate, more accurate than I expected it to be after 2 years. there's not a lot of things. There's obviously some things that are wrong. Not a lot, though. The majority of it is just things that aren't included. Like, you know, it was written for 2.9. So there was just a mention of multi-site, but there was nothing, you know, detailed about it. Now we're going to have a whole chapter on multi-site, you know, things like that. Awesome. Things that new, like the menu management system wasn't around then, mm-hmm. you know, so stuff is just kind of missing because it didn't exist. So I'm excited to get back into it. It's going to be the same three authors, David Damscher and Hal Stern. And you know, it's a good book and I enjoyed writing the first one. So I'm really excited to get into the second one.
I'm excited to see someone really crush like all the multi-site minutiae.
Pressure's on.
Yeah, man.
Yep. I in the WordPress, the plugin development book, I did a whole chapter on multi-site and I love it. We do with my company, we do a lot of multi-site work, a lot. Like probably over half our clients are multi-site. So it's always been something I've been pretty deep into and have really enjoyed working with. So it's nice to kind of write some of that stuff down and get it out there. I would love to do an entire book on multi-site.
That would be fantastic.
More specifically,
more people need to run multi-site.
See, that's interesting because I was just going to ask whether, you know, you get so many requests, so much of your work is multi-site. Do you ever get people asking or saying they want to use multi-site that really shouldn't be? Maybe they
there are some. Think they I mean, want I think, and actually, I just gave a presentation at WordCamp San Diego on multi-site at Dre's event, and a lot of it was just kind of dispelling the myth because a lot of people, when they hear multi-site, they immediately get kind of scared of it, like, "Oh, I don't know, that sounds complicated. I've heard it's going to blow up my site, blah blah blah." And it's really not that scary, but there are times when you should use it, and there are times when you shouldn't, and I try to cover a lot of that. You know, it really depends on your use case for it, what you're trying to do. You know, even if you just have, like, I showed an example of a really, really large network we built, and I showed an example of a network that had two sites. Because I want people to realize you don't have to have this monstrous network to be considered, you know, to use multi-site. Like, you could have two sites, and it could be beneficial. But a lot of people don't think that way. They think, oh, I have to have, like, 50 sites or 1,000 sites. You don't need that. I mean, but that's not to say if you have two sites, it's a perfect fit for you. It really depends what you're trying to do.
Sure.
But there's not a lot out there on multi-site. I mean, Andrea and Ipsten, I'm sorry, I butcher her name every time. They just came out with that ebook on multi-site, which we touched on last time because they had the whole pay what you want model.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great ebook. It's really cool. It's majority of it's geared around more of the user, the administrator of a network. Whereas I would love to write something that's more around developers, because developing a multi-site is there's definitely some differences, some things you need to consider. And it can be a challenge because, to be honest, a lot of the functions and things you encounter when you get into core are so the naming conventions are so outdated. Everything's WPMU. Everything's blog ID. Everything is like there's no consistency around these functions. So even writing about it, you know, you have to spend a couple paragraphs explaining why everything talks about a blog instead of a site ID. You know, like you have to kind of preference the whole chapter on why it doesn't, the terminology and the code you're reading doesn't actually line up with what it is. Hopefully some things get cleaned up. I think that's the only thing kind of holding back a project like that is I think multi-site is going to evolve a lot more in the next few versions. I'm hoping anyways.
But so has WordPress,
kind of
right?
A moving target.
So I mean, you talk about your book is a couple years old, and it's really held its weight in terms of with all the updates that have come out, and it's still relevant. But I think that there's been significant changes over the last 8 years in WordPress. Out of 200 books, I'd imagine that not all of them are going to be dead on. I think that there is a place for having that type of resource and material around multi-site, and now is as good a time as any. And then you iterate from there as it makes sense. Frederick, what's your real take on that? You're real straight to the point on, hey, you know, everybody or there should be a lot more people using multi-site. What's the real drive behind that?
Well, from a lot of perspectives, I mean, I just see so many people that have got, you know, multiple installs, and then there's WP Manage and WP Remote and all these different things out there to kind of help you out as the owner administrator. But at the end of the day, like, you don't really need that much stuff. I mean, you really just need to have like one login and to be able to bounce around and do a couple things, keep your stuff updated and publish, you know. And from a performance perspective, you know, if you've got like a VPS or even some pretty bad hosting, if you've got, you know, 15 installs of WordPress, you know, and two of them for poking around, and the rest are real sites and all that other kind of thing that we all get into when you use WordPress for years. You're not really helping the host, you know, help you by having all those scripts running all over the place that are all doing the exact same work. Just get yourself one install. You can scale your VPS further. You can scale your, you know, your deployment further in general. I mean, there's a reason why WordPress.com is multi-site, you know, and it's not and it's not because they couldn't figure out how to do automate a whole bunch of installs if they wanted to do that, you know.
I'm with you.
So that's where it was coming from.
Well, I like it, and I agree. I'm a big proponent of multi-site anywhere you can install a network. What did Josh say earlier? A network in a network? Wasn't it the title Inception. Of your discussion? I think that was the title of your discussion, if I'm not mistaken, Brad, or something close to it, no? Or you talked about a network in a network at WordCamp San Diego.
Oh, yeah, I had the network in a network, which is a plugin by Ron and Andrea. You can have multi-site networks inside of networks. I was like, wrap your head around that one for a minute. Network of networks.
Right.
It's possible, but I don't know if I'd want to get into that.
I think I forget when it was. This was years ago when it might have been maybe the first WordCamp I went to was at WordCamp Chicago, I think 2008, maybe. In any case, one of these first events I went to, and whichever one it was, Matt was speaking, and one of the things that he said that has kind of stuck with me as one of those cool things that I look forward to is he said that, you know, in the long run, they hope to, for the project to get to a point where you can basically start a blog wherever you want to, right? So it's sort of multi-site to that next level where if you want to, hey, I just want to start a blog at this URL, or maybe I'm three pages deep, you know, in this hierarchy, and now I want to put a blog there too, that... Just that as sort of a goal to reach, I think, is pretty exciting just in terms of – because, I mean, you know, everybody's run into something like that before. But just, I guess, the power behind a tool like that would get really exciting. And lots of useless blogs, which is always great too. But, yeah, that's probably a few years out from even multi-site advancing.
We shall see what happens.
Indeed. Well, we do have one other probably – I'd call that – probably fair to call it a hefty topic to get into, kind of rehash some stuff that went down at the end of last week. Before I do that, I want to, before we get into just that probably 20-minute discussion, which is what I'm sure it's going to be, I want to thank our other sponsor so they don't get forgotten, which is seedprod.com. And I will link that one up. It's seedprod.com, but really it's their Coming Soon Pro plugin. So this is actually really cool because there are a lot of themes out there that you can use as sort of a coming soon or like a landing page before you launch a site. And people use that stuff all the time. I mean, I know I've been guilty of it. I'm sure we all have because you have an idea. And so you put up a, you know, a theme landing page and it collects emails. And a lot of times, at least in my case, you never really get to it. So it always just sits there. But what's cool about this is it's actually a plugin. And there's a free version on WordPress.org. But what it does is the same sort of thing, but it's a plugin rather than a theme. So it's sort of a maintenance mode advanced, I guess, so that you can be working on stuff when you're logged in, and then everybody else comes and they see the coming soon, or I guess the landing page that collects your emails. So pretty cool. Like I said, they do have two plugins in the WordPress.org directory. One of them is Ultimate Coming Soon Page, and the other one is Ultimate Maintenance Mode. But then the Coming Soon Pro paid upgrade brings a bunch of other cool stuff with it. So once again, thanks to SeedProd and the Coming Soon Pro plugin for sponsoring WP Late Night.
Awesome.
I think a lot of people are jumping on.
I thought you were.
Oh, man, you guys all just exploded.
Kaboom.
Kaboom. Okay, one at a time.
I was going to say, I think a whole bunch of people are jumping on that bandwagon because, well, that sounds bad. But anyway, what was it?
Not every bandwagon is bad.
Yeah, it's a good point. Woo Themes added that to their Woo something or other.
Like a landing page sort of thing?
Yeah, the maintenance, the super maintenance page deal they added. And who are the other guys? There was, what is their name? Yeah, well, actually, one of my other buddies found SeedProd today on his own. So those guys are definitely crushing it. So
absolutely.
Sweet.
I'm excited by it because there aren't enough quality self-branded So like non-marketplace commercial plugins out there. There's tons of commercial themes. I don't think there are yet enough just really exemplary brands built around selling WordPress plugins. So I get excited when I see stuff like Seedprod for that reason.
At first, I thought you were advertising a coming, like literally they were coming soon. I was like, that's kind of odd that they would advertise and they're not even launched. I was like, oh, wait.
That is bold of them.
It's cool
to do that.
I swear I've been saying I'm gonna fork maintenance mode for like 2 years now because they never update and it like there's a lot of little features I want and they don't have and you know I'm gonna have to look into this because this might be something I'd use and I love paying for quality stuff so as long as it's solid I'll buy dev license and I won't look back you know
maybe you can work out some sort of a trade where you can name their next plugin because I know that's really difficult to do right
I tell you what
people have a hard time with that
now we're talking WordPress product
WordPress barter system. I like it. Coming to a camp near you.
Yeah.
I'm just interested in making Brad money. That's what I want to do.
Well, it's all about Brad and cash.
Funny.
Everything around me. That's what I'm talking about. I'll tell you what.
Oh, Brad, I'm going to kill you.
Quick announcement, and this is nothing crazy, but WordCamp Orange County, I'm going to be there. Are you guys coming up, going to any WordCamps here coming soon?
I'm speaking at WordCamp NYC and in Romania.
All right.
Maybe another one. Oh, Boston, hopefully.
Well, I'll be seeing you at BlogWorld Expo. I'll be out there here at the beginning of next month. So excited to catch up with you there. And maybe we can partake in a couple of these and work the rest of the evening. So that'd be good. Brad and Ryan, are you guys heading to anywhere exciting here soon?
I'm speaking at WordCamp NYC too, so I'll see. Well, I'll see you there, Frederick. I know Dre, you got something going on that weekend, but I will be. Dre and I are going to a Yankees game the week before while he's at Blog World, so I'll get to see Dre before. But I'm excited to be back in New York City. I haven't spoke. They didn't have one last year, and the year before there was a conflict, so I haven't been in like 3 years, and I spoke on security. Oh. And I'm going to speak on security again. So I'm excited to be back speaking at NYC. It's going to be awesome.
Looks like WordCamp Columbus is in my area. That's in about a month and a half.
Very cool.
Definitely be heading there. I was actually really enjoyed it last time. So I look forward to going again in July. And I think, I have to check the WordCamp calendar, but that's the only one that comes to mind.
Yeah, I'll be Orange County. We'll be hanging out over there. That's June 2nd through the 3rd. Brandon and Jeff do a wonderful job. This is their third year running, and I'm very excited about the event. It's been amazing the last couple years. Tony is going to be talking about security at the event, so that'll be cool. It's always good to get some security geekness going. Speaking of Tony and WordCamps.
Yes.
It's been an interesting, probably 5-6 days or 4 or 5 days. He released a post this last week talking a little bit about the sponsorship levels and options that were released last week for WordCamp San Francisco. And a lot of discussion, a lot of comments, different posts, overall a lot of movement in the community around varying opinions as to how the sponsorships are being handled for San Francisco, the events being handled as a whole. And I'd like to get your guys' take on the discussion and where it's kind of morphed from day one to now. It's been a pretty interesting, crazy discussion, if you ask me.
Well, and I think I'm interested too, because I know, Brad, you, Dre, and Brad are both organizers of WordCamp, so I think that there's definitely a factual side of the discussion, right, about how and why do things happen the way they do. But then, it's also important to look into the perception of and I guess the issues that organizers run into and the questions that they have, because some of the stuff, some of the questions, and some of the issues that were brought up, I hadn't, or at least I don't remember hearing about before, so. It's definitely been interesting seeing the discussion. Some parts of the discussion better than others, that's for sure. But that usually happens when community drama gets kind of stirred up. What do you think, Brad? Because you're the one between the two of us, yes, that has done WordCamps before. And just yes, I am going to bring Tony on in a second.
Yeah, well, in my personal opinion, I side with the initial post. I think the WordCamp Central, WordCramp.org, kind of has this list of rules that organizers have to kind of abide by. And one of them is around sponsorships and, you know, limits. And obviously it's not an in stone requirement or stipulation. However, you know, if you look at the comments and you tally up all the organizers that have commented and agreed with Tony on his initial post, there's over 10 different WordCamps where the organizers have voiced their opinion and said, yes, I agree. Yes, this is not fair. You know, because we had the same problem. We did WordCamp Philly, and we wanted to have our top sponsorship package be $2,500. I already had one person committing to that, saying, sure, oh, that's fine. And WordCamp Central came back and said, no, the top sponsorship that you can do is $2,000. So they, even though I already had someone committing to it, they said you can only do $2,000. So I just lost $500 because of what they said. But all right, I'll follow the rules. You know, other WordCamps are actually – can't be the size that they want to be because of those rules were in place where they want to have larger sponsorships to get a bigger venue. We're lucky. Our venue's donated in Philly the last 2 years from Temple University. Great facility. Everybody loves it. Awesome, you know, amazing people. But a lot of WordCamps don't have that luxury, and that's the biggest expense is your venue. You know, some WordCamps are paying 15, 20 grand just for a venue for 2 days. So, I mean, I totally side with Tony's post. I mean, I think it was ridiculous. And the fact that, you know, if you go through the comments and you read and there's some back and forth and some good points on both sides, I think the underlying issue is here that all of these organizers have voiced their opinions behind the scenes directly with WordCamp Central. And now it's kind of blown up into the public because nobody was listening. And I understand these were separate conversations. I had the same complaint when I was organizing Philly last year. I went back and forth with them on the budget. It sounds like all these other organizers had the same complaint. So why was something should have clicked on Central side saying we need to adjust this? Everybody's not happy, and it didn't click. So then it blows up in the public and gets bad press for everybody. So it should have been handled way before it got to this point. It wasn't. So I think that's where this post came from and where all these comments came from. I mean, there's over 70 comments now, and they're all really good comments. I mean, it's a good read. You should definitely read through this if you haven't.
Absolutely. Well, and above that, there's an avatar of Tony with a parrot, and that just does it for me. You know, I don't know. I've been through it twice in the sense of working with the foundation, and there has been a lot of governance that's been introduced over the last year and a half, and it's a very immature process. They're still working through that and putting in a lot of work to do that. So I want to caveat my kind of portion of the discussion with that. So it's not that people aren't working through this, but there's a lot of I don't know, do as I say, don't, you know, do as I do. And at least from a perception perspective, that's what we're seeing as organizers. Not to say that it's the case, but that's surely what it looks like. Why does a WordCamp, yes, it is the premier WordCamp, and I get that. The first one, it's the big boy. We do the state, you know, the state of the word every year and the whole nine. But why don't they follow the same rule set? If that's the case, why does it work that way? Now, not just from a name perspective, but sponsorships in the whole nine. I run San Diego, and San Diego has been an amazing, successful event the last 2 years. We almost doubled in size this year, okay? And that was because we restructured our sponsorship packages a bit, but we were still very well limited into the amount that we can, you know, we can ask for in terms of donations and sponsorships from any sponsoring entity. We pushed it out to the community in small packages, you know, so that individuals from the community could sponsor. We had a ton of those, but it was a major challenge. Above and beyond that, there were some major intricacies that had issues and problems to get the money even to us, right? So the process as a whole is very immature, and I think it's just a major challenge to look at the way that it works for one and not the others, right? So at the end of the day, where's this going to go? I don't know that there's going to be much change, but it's very apparent that there's a challenge across a lot of different WordCamps and organizing committees, or we wouldn't see this type of traffic. To what some of the comments say, well, you know, careful what you say, Tony. I think that's wrong. This has been discussed in private. I think his points were non-malicious, and he was very candid around the specific topics he was discussing here. And I think he brings up some valid points, and I think it's important to talk about these things openly. We are we are a community driven world, right? So we need to continue working that way.
I think the big issue they're having is they're. Oh, go ahead, Frederick. You haven't voiced yet.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, Mashable kind of grew up the grassroots, you know, communities and meetups and everything else across the country, and, you know, develop conferences and things like that. And it's just, it's only natural that you want to do two things when you have an event. You want to, one, go bigger than you did last year because it's more fun. And then two, you want to bring in, if you can, you want to bring in more speakers. And not, it's not that the ones from the year before aren't cool enough. It's not that, you know, your local community is not, you know, awesome. It's that, you know, they want to see people they don't normally see. I mean, that's part of the work that organizers, I feel like, that organizers get joy from, and it's also their obligation. It's like, listen, if you come down here, we're going to bring you some special stuff. And I'm just a little, you know, for my part, you know, I'm a little naive, I guess. I'm a little surprised that some of this stuff is so challenging, because, you know, for organizers, because it's like, these guys are already volunteers. You know, they're not going out to buy, you know, to make some Lexus payments or something because they raised some extra money, you know? So that's the thing that kind of surprised me. And then the other thing that surprises me is that I don't think anyone's sitting down thinking, oh, I want to make the biggest WordCamp ever. I think what they want to do is they want to make wherever they're at cool. They want to bring cool people there, and they want people to come back every year so that, you know, they can feel proud of their community. I mean, that's all anybody ever does. You know what I mean? Like, even in high school, every year, if you went to a private school, you know, they had a prom for everybody. And every year they tried to make it more ridiculous. Like, everybody always tries to go bigger. You know, it's not even an American thing, you know? So it's kind of disappointing to me that some of these things happen.
Well, you know,
it just seems like they're really trying to cookie cutter all of them. You know, like, they're setting these prices and these caps. And again, it's not set in stone, but it's definitely close to it, because I think the website says 1,500 and they usually try to cap it around 2,000. But they're making them cookie cutters. So they're saying an event costs the same in Philly as it does in New York, as it does in San Diego, as it does in Columbus, you know, Ohio. Like, no offense to Columbus, Ohio, but I can promise you venues and stuff are a little bit cheaper in Columbus, Ohio versus either coast. You know, it's like, you can't cookie cutter this stuff. You can't look at inflation rates or look at cost of living rates at cities. I almost think it should be based on that, cost of living rates, because just like when I was in the military, wherever you're stationed is the kind of cost of living you get paid. So if I'm stationed in San Diego, I make way more money than if I'm stationed like Kansas. You know, it's all about cost of living in the area you're at. And they're trying to cookie cutter it, and it's just not working.
Well, so I don't want to – I think there are two – kind of sides of this that are being talked about, and they kind of get mixed together, and I think it confuses things a little bit. I definitely don't. I think it's a valid question, and I'm also curious to find out more about the thinking behind sort of managing WordCamps the way that they are, and I think that's interesting. And I definitely don't want to downplay the concerns that organizers have about that. But I think the other half that I really have no issue with at all. That I don't think is nearly as interesting is the part of comparing WordCamp San Francisco to other WordCamps. And I think those are two conversations, one about how WordCamps on a local level, you know, with the organizers that we're talking about and them managing it and how they're allowed to manage it. I think that's interesting and worth digging more into. But when it comes to WordCamp San Francisco and other WordCamps, I guess I might be the only one, but I guess I don't have an issue with them being different. Right.
Think WordCamp San Francisco, if they are like this big yearly conference, the annual conference, which I get, we all understand, like, San Francisco's word started. It's the biggest of the year. It's kind of like a who's who of WordPress. But the problem is that I have with the sponsorships is you're pricing out almost every single WordPress business there is. I'm not going to spend $5,000 to sponsor the lowest package to get a link on the website. That's right. Ridiculous.
And I think that's fine. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think you're perfectly reasonable. I think those are, like, we were talking to Strebel last week about Pressnomics. And I think he would say, and I think he's in the chat room, and he had said a couple of times that he's trying to structure it so that the sponsors supporting it are actually kind of outside of the WordPress community, right? So that it's other kind of companies that would be interested in getting at that group. you know, through a conference like that or supporting it. I think it's probably a similar sort of thing, which is why they kind of price it the way that they do.
Well, maybe the
I just
level,
think if it's the who's who of.
It's a decision. I'm not saying, like, I understand the decision. Yeah, I mean, it can certainly be criticized, but I think that's is a different level than saying, why is it not like other WordCamps? I mean,
I don't think it needs to be like other WordCamps, but can you see the direct correlation being it's a WordCamp? I don't care if it's the first one or not. Then at the end of the day, it's a WordCamp. I mean, that's it's unrealistic to think that other organizers and other camps and other people in the community won't have a direct connection between that WordCamp and others, whether you want to call it strictly by name or not. It doesn't make sense, right? If you want to push out that direction, make that understood a bit. I mean, what's with the lack of transparency there? I don't understand it.
I think it's go ahead, Frederick.
I was just going to say, I don't have a problem with that exception case at all. I mean, that kind of thing happens. It's, you know, they're grandfathered into it, and you know, let's respect grandfather, right? But at the end of the day, it's like, why not just call it WordCamp? And then everything else is a child, right? WordCamp, WordCamp San Diego, whatever it is, you know? And I think that would help people understand a little bit better. But for me,
child camps and grandchild camps and
but for me, I just look at it.
It stops at child camps. But I get your point, exactly. Frederick. I agree.
But for me, when I look at it, I'm just like, I don't see any reason why, you know. I'm pretty sure that people aren't gonna, with meetups that happen all over the place all the time around different brands and communities and everything else, people aren't gonna go like, you know, try to set up for or buy a venue they can't afford and do all kinds of ridiculous things. I mean, I'm sure it'll happen, you know, mistakes happen, but like, I don't think most of the folks who are trying to get, you know, 300, 400, 500, whatever, 100 people in a room are going to fart around and make mistakes that embarrass the community or embarrass the foundation. And I understand that they want to, you know, help people. They want to bring some structure to things. But I think people just need to accept the fact that it takes an inordinate amount of work to really get everything polished and organized. And, you know, you kind of have to front load some of these problems, you know, to get to, otherwise they don't go away. And, I don't know, I guess that's.
Yeah. Unless you, and no, you're completely right. Unless you've done a WordCamp, you don't, it's hard to realize the amount of work that goes into it. Cause you show up on the day of, you have a great event. You go home that night and you're done. But if you've organized a WordCamp, it turns into a full-time job really, really quickly as the event gets closer. I mean, I had, two WordCamps ago. I was juggling not only my business, but WordCamp and also writing at the same time. It was like a hellacious October for me. I mean, it was, you know, 18, 20-hour days. It was stupid. But it was, you know, I did it because I wanted to be successful and I wanted to make Philly proud and I wanted to have this awesome event. I wanted everybody to say they had a great time. I didn't want it to be for nothing, you know? So, and I think that there's a lot of passion. All the organizers have a passion. They wouldn't do it. But it's, I don't know. I think at the end of the day, it just comes down to like, if they just had a different name, if it was WordCon, if it was WordPress Apocalypse, if it was whatever you want to call it, like, just don't call it a WordCamp if it's going to be treated like it's not a WordCamp, you know?
Right before I intro Tony here, then the one thing I'll say to that is if that's the one thing that's hanging people up, I think that's a really, really silly thing to get hung up on. but that's just me. Tony, are you there?
I am. How's it going?
It's going all right. So this is Tony Perez who wrote the post that we were just talking about, and we were able to pull him in to the call tonight. Figured we'd kind of talk about what we were just talking about, but with him on. So
getting away from the heckling in the chat.
Is there heckling in the chat? I guess I should pay closer attention.
Nah, everybody's being awesome.
No. I mean, I think that so this post, you know, when I woke up and I saw the email, I had subscribed to get notifications. It just kind of shocked me when I saw it, and I just felt compelled to say something. And I kind of always think back to everybody's kind of discussion around, oh, you can't say anything. And I was like, man, the hell with that. I'm just going to post something just because – if I'm shocked, I'm sure that everybody else that woke up and saw this email is just as equally shocked. And that's kind of how it stemmed. And it just kind of snowballed from there. I do think, though, that you have a very good point, Ryan, that I think that it's convoluted the discussion in that it's talking about WordCamp San Francisco, and then now it's tied it to the rules that we as organizers have from WordCamp Central, and some of that is just kind of just getting real messy. And it's really, really good for us, I think, to kind of break those two apart. I agree with you, Ryan, in that placing so much emphasis on the name WordCamp and WordCamp San Francisco, it is a silly thing. And if anybody knows me and has talked to me in the past, I try to stay away from emotional discussions, and that's what this is turning into, is because it's about a principle on both sides. So Brad says, well, why, if they're going to be this, then just make them, you know, just don't call it that. Call it WordCamp, right? WordCon, right? Then you've got Matt on the other side says, well, this is my event, and I've had it since whenever I started in 2006, and I'm going to call it WordCamp, goddamn, and that's my thing. You know, and you can't come to a rational conclusion when emotions are involved, and which is why I like to steer away from those kind of conversations. So whether they are or aren't subscribing to the rules set forth for the WordCamp trademark, who are we to say? I don't know. If it was being put on by the foundation, then the foundation, as the true owners of the trademark, really have the right to do whatever they want with it. If it is indeed put on by an individual and not the foundation, then I would argue that they do have to comply with the WordCamp Central rules, as they are the governing body for the foundation. But where do you draw that line? It's so much ambiguity between the different parties. You know, who's running what? Is it Matt individually? Is it automatic? Is it the foundation? Is it WordCamp Central? Is it some other property that we don't know about? You know, and that's, I think, where it gets convoluted. And I think that I think the real issue here, and I've had several conversations offline with folks on this, is communication. If folks would just come out and just talk to us and say, this is why we're doing things, and these are the challenges, and this is the lessons learned that we've had from the 200 plus work camps that we've had to organize and help get situated, I think that most rational people would agree. And whether they agree with it completely, they would be able to say, I can see how they came to that conclusion.
Man, hello. You really jumped on there.
So what's
oh, sorry.
No, that's good.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's so, like going through your posts.
We're
drinking so many
beer,
different.
Drinking Red Bull. Let's go.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think he's drinking Red Bull with a splash of coffee in it. Like, I'm kidding. I love you, Tony. No, but I think so at the end of the day, like, what is the end goal here? Like, what is it? You know, it's your post is great. The comments are great, but it's like there's no kind of wrap up to it. What is the wrap up that everybody wants? What is it that fixes this issue?
Well, I think there's two things here. One is we need to break away from WordCamp San Francisco. Let them do their thing. They're already moving along. We all know as organizers what it takes to put on one of these events. And once something goes public, it's public. Nobody wants to lose face. Nobody wants to change. Forget about it. Leave it. Move on. I think where we can really kind of make change, and we've already got Matt's ear. He's already responded to saying, whoa, I didn't know this, guys. And he makes a very, very good point in his post. He says, guys, this is written on WordPress paper, not on stone. And that puts a spot on it. You know, that's exactly, if you read kind of their opening lines on the foundation page, is how do we democratize the publishing platform and specifically open source. And I think that talks to that. And I'm very happy to see that. Now, it's very different than saying, you know, it's now you've got to be able to walk the walk. You know what I mean? So you said you're going to do something. Now you need to follow up, and I think it's on us as a community to hold them accountable to that and see what comes of those conversations. So what have you learned, and what can you share with us to better educate us on the thought process around the governance that's being put in place? Now, the real end game, I think, is this. Obviously, a lot of organizers, and I've heard a lot of like, oh, these are just the normal guys. And I would argue with that, and I would say we've got guys coming in from Australia. We've got guys coming in from Canada, from all points of North America, coming in and expressing their thoughts. I think that this is a really unique opportunity for these organizers to come together, share their thoughts, and offer to help the Camp Central, WordCamp Central. It's very easy to say you have a problem. It's a lot harder to say you have a problem and we want to help you come up with a solution. And I think that's the real key, and I think that's the real takeaway. What I would like to see from it is this unity between organizers, all these individuals that want to put on awesomeness in their respective locales, to come together, share thoughts, and communicate that to the foundation and say, look, we want to be partners with you. We want to share with you. We're already working to extend the brand. Now help us help you. And I think that's the real end game. And I'm actually in the process. I've been talking to folks. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I think that your point is exactly right. It's communication. It's an open conversation. I think there needs to be almost a conversation between all these organizers and WordCamp Central, and the foundation, whoever else needs to be involved. But it should be closed off only to people who have organized a WordCamp to voice their opinions, what they liked, what they disliked. You know, I haven't even, you know, I've done Philly 2 years now. And, you know, there was no kind of feedback on the process. Now, sure, I could have, you know, submitted things and this and that, but I feel like we do that during the process when we're saying this doesn't make sense, why are we doing it this way? That is the feedback, you know. After a WordCamp, if you've ever done one, all you want to do is crawl in a hole and hibernate for 2 weeks because you're you're literally mentally and physically exhausted. Like, you just have to get away from it for a while. Like, you don't even want to talk about it anymore because you put so much of yourself into it. And you guys don't want to talk about it. I mean, it was the same way. It just needs to be a conversation, an open conversation, where both sides are speaking, and things are happening rather than just this back and forth and nothing ever comes of it.
Well, here's the thing.
That comes back to Tony's point in terms of communication, right? I mentioned it when I was talking a bit earlier and getting a little bit emotional, as Tony will put it. I'm excited about it. I'm passionate about this, right? I want to be able to put out a brilliant event and maximize the amount of people that are learning stuff about WordPress in our local community. Why are we segmented? When, you know, wow, I just brain farted. Who cares?
Well, here's the thing. I've talked to folks both at the foundation, folks that that work with the foundation, folks that represent WordCamp Central, and this is the thing that we all have to remember, is that the same people that are helping to help establish governance around these rules and these guidelines that they're encouraging us to follow are also the same people that are engaging on the releases of WordPress 3.4 and theme reviews and code reviews and all this stuff, and they're volunteering in those respective areas. My point in saying that is a lot of their times are stretched, and so things always fall under the crack. And I think one of the things that fall through the crack is, one of the things that is falling into the crack and is probably impacting us the most is communication. And I think that that's where we can come as a community and say, hey, you know what? Let us help you by communicating to you some of the local challenges that we have to figure out how we can put together better governance. Because here's the thing. My argument is not around the need for governance. I think that there is some level of need for that. When I read posts about businesses that have sponsored events but have not received anything in return and pretty much didn't even get it, as much as tickets at two different camps, that's a real concern. We also don't hear about those camps that have failed. A lot of the people that have responded are organizers that have been successful. And I think that's something that we need to keep in perspective, because we don't hear about any of the bad, because WordCamp Central is not going to come and say, hey, you know, Joe Schmuckatelli in, Podunk, Arkansas or whatever. Sorry if you're from Arkansas. But, they just try to embezzle $10,000. And I'll tell you what. From the conversation that I've had, it is happening. We're just not hearing about it. And I applaud them for not.
It's happened. I mean, it's definitely happened. I think I feel like if you've done a successful event, then you should earn some kind of respect or something. You know, once you've done one right and it's been proven, then okay, you're good. Like, you've done it. You know what you're doing. I don't need to like be over your shoulder the whole time, because I know you know what you're doing. Now, obviously, I know there was a problem with WordCamps out there that were 90% of the topic for SEO or how to make money on your blog. Like, that's not a WordCamp.
Exactly.
I get that. And I think the governance needs to be there to stop things like that. But once you've proven yourself, why does it need to be as strict once you've done it? You know, you've done it successfully. You've got to do it again. It's going to be, like Frederick said, you only want to make it better the next year. We're already thinking about Philly this year. Like, how can we make it better? What can we fix? It didn't work last year. What can we do to make it better this year? That's all you want to do, is make the event that much better the following year.
And I think the argument could be that that there should be a bigger focus around those type of problems around WordPress meetups versus WordCamps, because there's a whole lot of that, funny business going on in the WordPress meetup world compared to any WordCamp I've been to. Just saying.
I think we've touched on it a couple of times here that I think the reason that these discussions always go the direction they do is because, well, first of all, at the heart of it, it all becomes very personal, whether it's Dre's or Brad's event. Tony, I know you're involved with the events. Whether it's Matt's event, whoever's event is being discussed, obviously everybody feels like lots of ties to that, because that's their baby. Sure. And so I think that's one of the reasons. And the other reason is because, well, kind of the same thing. all the issues that happened, there are some general concerns that have come up, but a lot of times, like you mentioned Matt's comment on your thread, Tony, which I actually hadn't seen until you just mentioned it now, and actually saw that he commented there, and then Jane clarified further down that what has been perceived as like sort of a universal cap on support levels isn't necessarily that. It's actually dealing with each camp as issues come up. So I think that a lot of the problems, like there are some general themes that have been brought up, but it's really kind of individual issues that are being dealt with on a camp by camp basis that are just maybe drawing a trend or becoming sort of something that we can kind of trace a line between. But that it's really hard. It's not necessarily something that can probably be solved on a large scale, right? It's probably each camp has individual, and that's what you guys are saying too.
Yeah, that's why this is so complicated. I think if someone is trying to organize a WordCamp and there's a doubt as to whether or not they can pull it off, I mean, that's what a governing body is for. It's like, wait a minute, what are your credentials, buddy, right? But then once you get past that, it's like, okay, Mr. Organizer, share with us your due diligence.
That happens already. There's a review process, and I apologize for cutting you off there, Frederick. There's a review process. Even this being my second WordCamp this last, 2012 or 2011, I had to, or this year, excuse me, March of this year, I had to put in an application.
What year is it?
I don't even know. Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's all about WordPress. We had to put in an application, and we had to go through a review process and discuss with folks over at WordCamp Central to ensure that we were fitting and doing it. And this was after already having a successful event last year and bringing it to San Diego. So that process already exists as part of the whole push into becoming an organizer. So I apologize for interrupting.
No, it's okay. And, I understand that when I get on a plane, you want to check my ID, even if I've flown, 300 times before. But at the same time, it's like, if I pass those qualifications and I'm trying to do my thing for my community, I understand the people there, I'm on the ground, where others are not. Shouldn't it be more about like, hey, Mr. Organizer, share with us your due diligence because, we want to support you and part of us supporting you is like, hey, all the money comes here, and we take care of that for you. We've got your back, our bank account's bigger than your single event. You've already qualified to be able to lead the community in your area. That's fantastic. And share with us what your expenses are and what you want to do differently and let these guys pitch a whole story. Like when I speak at events, I don't ever really like personally, I rather go to the organizer, not because I'm an expert on organizing things, but because these guys are just conscientious people. I go to organizers. I'm like, well, what kinds of coverage do you need? Like content are you missing from your event? Like, what would you like me to cover? And like, I don't know if that's strange or something, but yeah, I can talk about a lot of different things for an inordinate amount of time, so can everybody else on this, on this show right now. So, maybe that is strange, but like, I don't go with this agenda like, oh, I need to get everybody on W3 Total Cash, like everybody needs to suckle at the teat. I'm not thinking that at all. I'm just like, I want to help publishers, and so – when I started at W3 Total Cash, Google didn't come out and say, your rankings are going to suck if your site is slow. I did it anyway. Do you know what I mean? And so organizers are the same thing. They have the same philosophy except for the community. And I said all that to say, I think the organizers, once their ID is not, as long as their ID doesn't say McLovin and they're qualified to lead their community – they should be able to share their vision, share their diligence, and get support for however that needs to take shape when it comes to spending the coin.
You said teat. I love it.
I still hung up on McLovin. Can I borrow that?
Feel free.
It's good stuff. Well, I mean, the thing that...
Actually, I have another go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, no, I was going to take it a little bit somewhere else, but so you go ahead, Brett. I want to hear
please,
what you're going to say.
Please, please take it because where I was going to take it
okay, good.
Was way
thank,
somewhere else.
Thank you for admitting that.
No,
like the thing about WordCamps that the only thing really about WordCamps that frustrates me as an attendee is that there are so many anymore. And in the near future, there are going to be so many more everywhere that it's virtually impossible to hit all of the ones that you want to. I mean, you'd have to pull a John and go basically every weekend to a WordCamp, or take red eyes to, you know, Vegas Geek, as I'm talking about, and go to, you know, 30 WordCamps a year or something like that to hit everything that's worthwhile.
You said feet. I actually
that. And right, I
have another. I actually have another little guest we can bring on the show to get his opinion. So let's see if he's. Is that the pink pony? Hey, pink pony, how you doing? What's so do you have an opinion one way or the other on 4K? Pink pony, what's your thought on? Oh, so you don't really agree with what we? Go ahead. And, all right. I guess I should just. Okay, he's gone.
Are you quite done? Wow, Brad.
I'm just sitting here. Hey, I have a badger over here.
That happened.
It's that time of the night. It gets real stupid real quick.
That's all I would say is I would thank you for at least holding off on this until after the 60-minute mark. That way we don't lose people.
I don't know if we've got many more topics to discuss here. I know Triple J is trying to get out to get some pizza. It closes at 10 p.m. That's a problem. Frederick, we've taken up a lot of your work time, and you still didn't consume a beverage. I'm a little hurt, but we'll make up for that at the beginning of next month.
Yes, we will.
You better work before you go to bed.
We'll make it happen. It's been a great show. Ryan, do you have anything else to push off beloved audience this evening?
So I think that pretty much does it. Frederick, is there anything? I mean, everybody... I feel weird asking you if there's anything you want to plug, because everybody so knows you already, and probably if they're not using W3 Total Cash, then they're insane people and they're probably not listening to the show anyway. So
on the teat.
So is there anything, you said you're speaking at Boston coming up, right?
Yeah, Boston, New York, Romania, Blog World, NYC. Nice. I think, hopefully I'll be able to get this next W3TC update out soon. Lots of good performance wins for everybody without them doing anything, so that'll be nice. And some point in the near future, I don't know if it'll be this month because I just added a whole bunch of tickets to my track for it, but got an analytics plugin coming out that I think will help a lot of publishers, so I'm excited about that.
You should really concentrate on the security side, but I'm not going to beat that up.
Well, you know, we got Cloudflare and W3TC. We gotta go offline about, you know, what we can do on security end, you know. But so the doors are all open. But wish me luck in trying to get this plugin out. Hopefully, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it's got a lot of goodies in it, so I'm looking forward to getting it out.
We'd love to hear back from you down the road when you get through that analytics piece and see where you go with that revision with W3TC. It'd be great to have you back. You've been amazing.
Appreciate it, guys.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks to everybody for listening in the chat. If you download this, then give us a rating in iTunes. We appreciate it. Otherwise, we'll catch everybody again for another WP Late Night next Wednesday night on the WP Candy stream at wpcandy.com/stream. See you, everybody.
Well, holy cow, I gotta bleed my pink pony.